is the 9/11 Truth Teleconference for 2/26/14. Craig, would you like to call the roll?
Yeah, sure. Well, how about since I have a pretty good idea who's on the call, I'll read the list of people I know are on, and if somebody's missing, they can let me know. I have Ned Delaney, Dwayne Dietz, Elizabeth Woodworth, Craig McKee, Ken Freeland, Mike Booth, and Paul Zaremka. Did I get everybody?
Oh, good show. Well, that is
like
moving quicker than that. Okay. So, first item on the agenda, as always, is approval of the minutes of the previous teleconference. Any objections to approving those? Hearing none, then those are approved. And then we can look at tonight's draft agenda, which was very, very limited. But it does include the one item that was added at the last minute of Ted Walters of NYC CAN to talk to us about the high-rise initiative. Where's the high-rise or high-rise safety or something like that? Anyway, he'll be here directly. So that's the only item on the agenda other than our usual open-ended conversations and stuff. Does anybody else have anything to add or any other comments on the agenda? Okay, well, hearing none, then I guess what we'll do is, since Ted is not here yet, we'll just open it up to announcements and go from there. Anybody have any announcements?
It's Ned?
Yeah, go ahead, Ned.
In reference to, I'm looking at the items on here that in reference to Kevin Ryan and our panel discussion at IUPUI here a few weeks back. I approached him about participating in a forum up here in Lafayette, and then also mentioned the teleconference. I received a response from him today, and he's not interested in pursuing that. So I just know he's really sensitive about feedback and various perceptions. But anyway, he's kind of off the agenda at this point as far as
okay.
Future participant.
All right. Well, we can cross him off our list of possibilities. Any other updates on possible special teleconference participants? Well, that's too bad. We don't really have anybody lined up for the next next special teleconference. And those were going really well. So if anybody makes any progress in any direction, you definitely want to pursue that.
Yeah.
There's I don't know if other people are interested in this or not, but we heard in December about these two congressmen, bipartisan, who were putting through a resolution to Congress to declassify the 428 pages from the 2002 congressional report, and those 28 pages are supposedly about the Saudi financing of the hijackers, alleged hijackers that came in through Los Angeles in January 2000. That's about 18 or 19 months before September the 11th. And they were met there by a Saudi agent, government agent. And there's been a lot kind of leaked over the years, but these two congressmen were really appalled when they finally got to see the 28 pages. So now they have six congressmen who are calling for a resolution to declassify. And whether we believe in those hijackers or not, if that resolution goes through and if the pages are declassified, it's going to be a real media storm, I think, because all of a sudden, there's right in your face. Like they were saying things like, we never thought we could be betrayed by such a good friend. This is what these two men were saying. So all of a sudden, I mean, that was reported in the mainstream media in December by a few big media outlets. So I've been thinking that anything that the 9/11 truth movement can do to support these guys, these six people. It could bring 9/11 back onto the radar in a pretty big way.
I'd like to play devil's advocate there for just a second to look at the other side of this, Elizabeth.
Who's speaking?
There have been arguments all
along.
Just Ken Freeland. There have been arguments all along that there are various fallback positions that they could use to re-engineer the 9/11 thing if things got too hot for the official story. And one of them is dependent on Saudi Arabia.
Sorry, it was which?
Dependent on Saudi Arabia. Another one is Pakistan, and another one, well, I won't go into all the other options, but these are considered to be fallback positions that they can use if the official story gets too incredible based on people's perception. And so it has been predicted by at least one pundit that at some point they would fall back and use one of these drop-back positions, like blaming on Saudi Arabia, in order to take the heat off the 9/11 narrative. I don't know if that's what's happening here or not, but I have to suggest that if this thing, there's no question it would create a big media storm, but assuming that it happens, how well does it really serve the 9/11 truth movement if what it does is argue that, well, yeah, the official narrative is correct, except that, Saudi Arabia rather than Afghanistan was behind the hijack here, okay? You see what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not sure how well that's going to serve the 9/11 truth movement. I'm just asking this question openly, but I think it's worth considering.
Well, the Saudis were allowed to fly out from Washington, where they'd been hobnobbing with the Bush family.
Right.
Remember, the Saudis were allowed to fly out. I mean, it would, on the day after 9/11, when all the other airplanes were grounded, these Saudi royals were allowed to fly out. And there was a lot of suspicion about that, too. But it would reopen, the focus on 9/11, which is never a bad thing. Like right now, it's pretty sleepy.
This is Ned.
Right.
Yeah, I wrote both these congressmen regarding their position on this, and this has been a number of weeks ago, and I've never received a response. I don't know that I really expected to receive a response, but considering the hype that they appeared to be attempting to make, I would have thought that they would have wanted to provide some follow-up. But so far, none has been forthcoming, at least in reference to my attempt to discuss the issue with them.
How did you contact them, Ned?
Well, I sent them some stuff in the mail.
And snail mail.
Ted Walknoll, are we still there?
Yeah. Oh, hi, Ted. Well, welcome. Okay, yeah, we're just completing a discussion here. But just be a second, and then we'll go ahead and introduce you and we'll get on your issue, okay?
All right.
Finish your comment. Or listen to who? I'm sorry, I'm not sure who's talking there.
Okay, this is Ned. Yeah, I'm pretty much finished with what I had to say.
Okay.
Yeah, we can save the discussion for another time. It was just a thought.
Yeah, well, thank you for letting us know about that, though, Elizabeth. I mean, I think it is a significant development, regardless of how it turns out for the movement. But it's definitely worth noting. So thanks for bringing it to our attention. Okay, Ted Waters is joining the call, and Ted is a member of NYC CAN, who is part of the, what is the official name of this new campaign, Ted?
The High-Rise Safety Initiative.
The High-Rise Safety Initiative, and he'll give us a brief report on its, its strategic approach and, any problems they've had with it and what support they've gotten, and then he'll be open for questions for further clarification. So, Ted, please go ahead.
Sure. Actually, I just wanted to know first who's on the call, just so I
Sure. Fair enough. The rest of us all know because we took the roll already. But
okay.
Craig, you want to tell who all is on the call?
Sure. Yeah, we have Ned Delaney, Dwayne Dietz, Elizabeth Woodworth, Craig McKee, Ken Freeland, Mike Booth, and Paul Zaremka.
All right, hey everyone.
Just to let you know also, Ted, the call is being recorded. We always record our teleconferences, okay?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
All right, so yeah, some of you I know are already somewhat familiar with the campaign, and I think some of you, a couple of you might have even contributed already, so thank you very much. So the initiative, the Higher Safety Initiative, is basically using the same ballot initiative process that we used in 2009, which is in cities in New York State, you can amend the city charter by getting a petition with a certain number of signatures, and then hopefully it goes to the ballot and the voters pass it by a simple majority. In New York City, we have to gather 30,000 signatures for the first phase when we submit a petition, and then we have 60 days where we wait for the city council to say to vote to put it on the ballot or to even pass the law. And then if the city council doesn't take any action, then we submit another petition with 15,000 signatures, and then it goes on the ballot automatically. Probably most of you are familiar with our campaign in 2009. Where the initiative would have established a local commission to reinvestigate 9/11, and the city was able to block the initiative from going on the ballot, challenging its legality, a few different aspects of the petition. What we're doing this time around, and I'll get into a little bit about what the flaws were before, or at least the grounds on which they challenged it before, and how this petition addresses those. What the petition this time around does, it would amend the city charter to require the Department of Buildings to investigate all high-rise building collapses occurring on or after September 11, 2001. And so that would apply to the collapse of Building 7. We've actually taken the approach of excluding the towers, which I can also discuss in a little bit more detail. But the gist of it is that we had to essentially create a charter or propose a charter amendment that is putting forth provisions that actually really belong in the city charter. I think the main obstacle that we ran into in 2009 was that what we were proposing, according to the city and according to the court, did not quite fit into a city charter, what should be in the city charter. So this time around, we're sort of more broadly, more generally modifying the responsibilities and powers of the Department of Buildings such that it has to investigate the collapse of Building 7. And that way we overcome really what the main problem was before. But when it comes down to it, there really are two goals. One is that the city will be required to investigate the collapse of Building 7, and the other that in the future, if there's any high-rise building collapses, the Department of Buildings will be required to immediately investigate those collapses. So that's the goal. So we have a campaign set up by the same organization that did it in 2009, and we have to really what it comes down to. We have sort of things set up now so that if we can raise enough money, we will be able to collect all the signatures, and you know hopefully there's a chance the city won't challenge a petition. Chances are they will, but basically we have things set up so that if we can raise the money, we will be able to collect all the signatures and get this on the ballot and hopefully win in November. And then after that, there would also be the work of trying to ensure that the city does conduct an honest investigation. And the overall goal here is that this really would be the first officially sanctioned investigation, and that it would... You know, that the Department of Buildings would essentially be in a position where it would be really hard for them to, lie about the collapse of Building 7. And they would have to conduct a real investigation, and it would be a turning point and would open the floodgates for further investigation of 9/11. So that's the campaign in a nutshell.
Before we open it up for questions, Ted, I do think that the question of why building the Twin Towers was excluded is something that you might touch on, because I'm sure everybody wants to know that.
Sure, yeah. So, well, you know, we, it comes down to, you know, being pragmatic in what we think the voters of New York City are likely to support. And it also comes down to what we think would be most beneficial if this gets on the ballot, what kind of public dialogue we want to see in the run-up to the election. And we determined that if the focus was on Building 7 and people seeing the collapse of Building 7 for the first time in TV ads that we're running for the in support of the campaign, and if it was Building 7, which is sort of less, you know, sort of a less painful topic for people, or a less controversial topic, that essentially people would be more likely to support it, either because they genuinely think it was, they, you know, question it when they see it, that it looks suspicious, or because, you know, it seems to relate more to high-rise safety, where the Twin Towers would be stoking a lot, you know, a lot more difficult feelings, and it would be harder to pass. The second reason is that we actually think that if it is passed, that the Department of Buildings, it's much harder for the Department of Buildings to conduct a fraudulent investigation if it's relating to Building 7 than the Twin Towers. Essentially, we're putting a really hot potato in their hands, and it will be relatively more difficult for them to lie about the collapse of Building 7 because it does look so much more like a controlled demolition. And the individual people that are actually working on the investigation will be more open to it and more inclined to investigate that possibility.
Okay, thanks. Who just joined the call?
Robin, sorry for being late.
Okay, Robin Horton on the call. All right, so right at this point, I think we're ready to create a stack for people that would like, other than myself, or in addition to myself, to ask a question of Tess. So who would like to be on the stack for that?
Ned Delaney?
Ned?
Dwayne.
Dwayne, who else?
Craig.
Craig, who else?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Paul, who else?
Mike Booth.
All right, I'll put myself on the stack then. All right, anybody else? All right, yeah, go ahead. You're first on the stack.
I'm sorry, Ken, did you...
I'm sorry, and also please keep your question pointed direct. It's very brief because Ted is only going to be with us a few more minutes, and we want to give everybody a chance to ask their question. So go ahead, Ned.
Yeah, has your group in New York, by any chance, done any pre-work, for instance, through the Oklahoma City Bombing Committee that did an investigation? And kind of had a set of precedent on for this sort of thing.
No, was there a local committee in Oklahoma that did an investigation?
Yeah, it was a community group of various professionals that formed and conducted their own investigation, and a fairly concise investigation. They have a publication that's still available called Final Report. I would encourage you maybe just to look into that and see if there's something there that would be of value.
All right, I'll do that, yeah. Was their investigation legally mandated in any way, or did they sort of pursue it independently?
I can't answer that directly. I'm thinking it was independent, but I'm not sure.
So if I just Google, like, local community group, Oklahoma City bombing.
If you Google and do a search for Oklahoma City bombing investigation,
okay,
team committee, it'll bring up a website and all this will be available.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Ted. Dwayne.
Ted. I was just wondering if you could give me a couple of examples of how you intend to make it a legitimate investigation, or give it a high probability it'll be legitimate?
Yeah, I think, you know, what is the first step is that we have to get it passed. And to do that, you know, if we get it on the ballot, we're hoping that we'll be able to raise a good sum of money and to have a really good campaign running up to the election. And just from that, we hope that there will be enough, you know, that there will be enough attention on this and that people will be voting for it because they are suspicious about the official explanation of the collapse, that there will be enough public pressure then to, force the department to conduct an honest investigation. After that time, you know, we would try lobbying. We would try lobbying the mayor, and we would, to the extent possible, lobby members of that department, try to educate them, at least present them with what we think is the evidence that it was brought down by controlled demolition. And then, you know, other sort of public, you know, campaign strategies could be used, ads or, marches, demonstrations, things like that. Hopefully that, you know, through the election process, we would sort of mobilize enough support and attention that it would be much more difficult for them to not tell the truth.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Dwayne. Craig.
Yeah. What's the group? The name of the group that's organizing this is what again, Ted?
The New York City Coalition for Accountability Now, NYCCAN.
Right, NYCCAN. Right. And so the signatures. These are just real quick, sort of factual. The signatures. You need them by when?
The first petition has to be submitted by July 3rd, and the second one by September 5th.
So when you say that they won't. If they don't do anything after the first one, then you have to do the whole thing again, but you don't need as many signatures the second time. I mean, would you think that it's likely that they're not going to react to the first?
It's likely that they're not going to react to the first. But actually, the you can gather all the signatures at once. You don't have to the second batch of signatures don't have to be gathered like after the first one is submitted, or like in that 60-day window. So really, hopefully, we will do all of it all at once, and then, you know, submit the first batch at one time, and the second batch, you know, 60 days later.
Okay, great. Okay, and let me just one last real quick thing. I'm sorry to take up extra time here, but when you
no
mentioned
problem.
About the thing being after 2001, I thought I heard that. So how do you differentiate between the towers and Building 7 in terms of what it is you're asking for? Like, how do you, is it from a certain date on, or how does that work?
Yeah, so in the definitions section of the charter amendment, we specify that the towers simply are not included in the definition of a high-rise, either a high-rise or high-rise collapse, or something like that. It basically says the department will be required to conduct an investigation into all high-rise collapses occurring on or after September 11, 2001. Where we define high-rise collapses, we exclude the towers. We think this flies on, you know, legitimate policy grounds that the department has a great interest in investigating the collapse of a building that was not hit by a plane, or in any future collapses of that nature. But the towers are sort of another story because they were hit by planes.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, Elizabeth.
No problem.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hey. We're doing a consensus point, and I've been in touch with Tony Zambotti about the William Pepper law, the submission to the, I guess it was the Department of the Inspector General of the Department of Commerce about that stiffener piece that's missing from the NIST report, which makes it fraudulent. And I'm thinking that when, I expect that you're probably going to use this as a really major part of wanting something that needs to be investigated, why that piece was missing from the drawings. And just making sure, like, some of us think that this is one of the most important things we have. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree that the omission of the stiffeners in the NIST report is really important and really key. And like, I think absolutely that's like provides a potentially a really important first step for this investigation, if it does happen, is to say run the model with the stiffeners in it and see what happens. And correct for that omission. So yeah, I think Tony and others are trying to, and AE911 Truth are trying to pursue that, you know, our legal means of recourse. And so this is just one other way of trying to get at that, and hopefully the Department of Buildings would be receptive and look at the research that's been done and use the original drawings to create their own model.
So do you think there's, do you think the public, like Dr. Pepper gives quite a nice lay presentation of it in his letter before introducing the technical diagrams and so on. And I was just wondering if the public who are signing the petition might be interested in knowing about this. Because the public always gets kind of riled when they think they're being cheated or defrauded or something like that. And this is pretty clear evidence that they were.
Yeah, the conversations that the petitioners are having with people signing the petition probably for the most part will not be able to get to that level of detail. Some people the conversation probably would go in that direction, and we would try to educate the petitioners so that they would be able to have those conversations with people and give them that information if the person's asking for it. At the same time, they also have the job to get as many signatures as they can as quickly as possible. And so it's hard, but I think that having something like that available for people, especially for like building professionals and if they meet people like that, something more complex and technical to give them, or just a discussion of that issue would be really, could be helpful for some people.
So if we have a consensus point up, you could point them to that too, as well as to the Journal of 9/11 Studies, where
I would say, because the consensus points tend to be very concisely stated, we could potentially use one if it just applies to Building 7, and it's fairly concise.
Well, we have about four already that apply to Building 7. But this would be a special extra one that would stand on its own, and it would complement the submission that's already published online on the Journal of 9/11 Studies, which is where Dr. Pepper's letter is right now.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
so
you.
I'll look at those. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Okay, Paul?
Hi, Dan. It's Paul Zaramta here.
Hey, Paul.
I have two things. You mentioned that the law you're referring to is a New York state law. It's not a New York City law. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a state law that governs how cities are able to pass their own laws. It's called municipal home rule.
So that could be done in Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Buffalo, or wherever. Am I wrong about that?
No, that's correct.
And nobody's mentioned any other city in New York that might want to do it? I mean, I understand why you mentioned New York City, but I'm just asking whether...
Well, this initiative process can be done anywhere in New York State. As far as doing it related to 9/11, I guess setting up
some
sort of
investigation. Yeah, it's kind of obvious to do it in New York City. I just wondered, whether anybody else...
No, I've never heard any discussion of doing it elsewhere. And then, if a nexus could be identified and there's a charter amendment that seems valid, that would tackle that issue. It seems possible.
Okay. That was okay. I didn't know that. The second thing is now I'm going to be I don't know. We've had a number of these attempts to use the law to get some results on our side, including, you know, the first CAN, which is obviously you know most about, but also the efforts in Massachusetts, Colorado, North, South Dakota, California, Oregon, you know, those places where there was the beginning of a petition, and actually even in Massachusetts, they got the Secretary of State to affirm that the petition itself was valid, and all we needed to do was get the signatures. But in the CAN case, it was the opposite. I mean, that we got the signatures, but then when we got to the judge threw it out for a whole bunch of reasons, okay? Now, my question is, when you introduced it tonight, you didn't say a whole lot about the legal aspects of the thing. Is there some place online where the reason why this particular formulation of the petition is much more powerful than the previous one?
Legally powerful, you mean, right?
And in other words, much less likely to be thrown out by, I mean.
Yeah,
I
understand your question. I understand your question perfectly. So first of all, quickly, yeah, there is a place online. If you go to the website of the campaign, highrisesafetynyc.org, if you click on the petition page, where the page where you can download the petition, further down on that page, we actually discuss what were the legal reasons why the last petition was thrown out and how this petition overcomes all of those challenges. I can talk through it a little bit in more detail now. I didn't want to get stuck in the weeds earlier on.
You to talk as much as, I mean, you know, I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mind.
Yeah, so the first issue the most critical issue for any charter amendment in New York State, there's been lots of case law that sort of narrowly constrains how you can amend a city charter. And what the courts have said is that it has to be the amendment that you're proposing has to be substantially related to an existing provision of the charter. The court found in 2009 that what we were proposing wasn't really related to any existing provisions of the charter. It was just creating a whole new charter provision. In this case, what we're doing is amending the duties of the Department of Buildings. And so we think it relates already to existing provisions of the charter because this department already exists. It has a certain set of duties and powers, and we're simply modifying those duties and powers. So that's the first and the most important one. Next, it has to do with jurisdiction. It was thrown out in 2009 saying that what we were calling for was an investigation into matters that were under federal jurisdiction. And that was debated between their lawyers and our lawyers. We've avoided that this time because we're talking only about high-rise building collapses, and it already is, that's like very clearly, firmly under the jurisdiction of the Department of Buildings in New York City. And it's irrelevant that it was related to, that this collapse was related to a terrorist attack. That doesn't make this the collapse of this building not fall under local jurisdiction. And then the other issues. Okay, so the other issue was financing. The financing plan that was put forth in the first petition essentially said that the funds would be raised privately, and that was not deemed a sufficient financing plan. Any charter amendment in New York State that will cost money, there has to be a financing plan included in it. Essentially, it has to be raising new revenue. You can't use existing revenue or budgetary processes to fund whatever your amendment is. And so this time around, we have a much more solid revenue mechanism. It's a surcharge, a 0.9% surcharge on all construction permits issued by the Department of Buildings. And so that would raise about $1 million a year. We've basically estimated that if this investigation was conducted, it can be conducted in any number of ways, but we've estimated that it would cost $2 million over 2 years. And so that's why we've set it at that amount.
You said 0.9%? 0.9%, is that what you said?
Yeah, 0.9%.
Of what the cost of the building permit would be. If it's $100,
yeah,
it would be $100.90.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly, yeah. So the last year, the Department of Buildings took in like $110 million in revenue from issuing construction permits. And so this would be an extra tax on top of that, 0.9%. And then the last two were that the petition, the last petition conferred law enforcement powers and prosecutorial powers on the commission, and this doesn't do that. So this completely avoids that issue. And then lastly, also, there was an issue with the petition actually appointing the members of the commission. It, according to the court, it basically violated, the established procedures for the appointment of public officials. And so there's no appointment of public officials happening in here, so it completely avoids that problem as well.
So come back then. So who is going to do the investigation?
So it would be the Department of Buildings. Most likely it would be their forensic engineering unit. It's actually a unit that was created in 2005. They mostly investigate, very small building collapses, incidents that happen during construction all over the city. But they do have a lot of technical staff. And, with the funds, they would probably be contracting out aspects of that investigation as well.
And what's to stop them from just using the NIST reports, or modified version of the NIST report? Why are they more independent, less likely to be bought out than NIST?
They would be because, first of all, because the public, there would be more attention on them. If this actually gets on the ballot and passes, there would have to be a lot of public attention that goes towards the whole campaign and the election. And then hopefully that could be harnessed to ensure that this department does conduct an honest investigation. They're short of sort of a fantasy or sensational creation of some sort of commission that already has the agenda of, or the goal of, determining who did it and how, whether this is probably the closest that we can get to a good investigation. We'll simply have to work very hard and educate the public and educate the mayoral administration about why this building actually collapsed.
Okay, thanks for all your answers.
Yeah, that
You're
was
welcome.
Comprehensive. This is Ken Freeland. I am basically going to come in for the third time with the same question that Duane asked and Paul asked at the end there, which is this. Given that these engineers or whoever they are, forensic experts, are not yet part of the 9/11 truth movement, we can assume that they probably have a conservative view of those collapses. And I still would like to know what legally prevents them from saying, in our view, the NIST report stands. Okay, it was an adequate investigation. We accept its findings, and we don't see any need for expending further research into the problem. What would prevent them legally from doing that?
Basically, it would be that the charter requires them to conduct an investigation. They couldn't simply read somebody else's report and then say, okay, that's good.
Yeah, let me interrupt for a second. What is the language there that makes it say that? What does that language look like?
Let me look it up 1 second.
Thank you.
Let's see here. The department shall conduct an investigation into the cause or causes of each collapse, the commissioner shall, to the extent the commissioner deems necessary and to the extent permitted by and consistent with the law, designate employees to assist in conducting each investigation, et cetera, et cetera. So they have to conduct some sort of investigation, and there are laws where if the public officer is not actually complying with the requirements of the charter, that we can sue them and force them to carry it out.
Well, yeah, but my question is this: what prevents them from interpreting that need for an investigation by saying, "Well, we did an investigation and we found out that lo and behold, NIST has already done the investigation and their findings are, in our view, adequate."
We've looked at that and we've determined that would not constitute an investigation for them to simply say that somebody else did it already. Even for them to say we read the report, that would not constitute an investigation.
Well, that it is a matter of interpretation.
It sure is.
And so their interpretation, they're very good and slippery at offering interpretations and somehow managing to carry them off. But if we have a demonstrably flawed and fraudulent report that we've already pointed out to them, that would head them off at the pass.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to if we run into a department that is just refusing to conduct an honest investigation, we have a legal means of suing them to actually get them to carry it out, and we would try to argue in court that they're not, or we would try to the extent that we can to exert public pressure, mobilize public pressure, to get them to do the investigation the right way.
Why isn't the word independent in front of the word investigation there? Why don't you just put that in there and then it would clarify that they have to do their own investigation and they can't rely on the work of others?
I mean, I'm not sure that inserting that one word would even guard against the scenario that you're concerned about, that I'm concerned about. I'm not sure that word would fix it. One of the issues that I have pointed, the first issue that we have with the petition that I talked about of it, that the petition has to be related to an existing provision of the charter. A related requirement when it comes to what are the basic requirements of a charter amendment in New York State is that it can't be overly detailed in how it instructs the public official to carry out their duties. And so wherever possible, where it wasn't necessary in terms of explaining what the issue was or what this department's responsibility was, we tried to avoid being overly detailed because otherwise it could be interpreted by the court that we are essentially trying to direct the commissioner in how he and exactly what we want them to do or how we want them to carry out their responsibility.
Well, yeah, but I think because this is a political initiative that it is free to make certain requirements in this change. And if you are asking this entity to conduct its investigation independently, you are clarifying that you want them to start from scratch when they investigate and not to simply rely on the work of others. I think it's a reasonable requirement. I don't think it's going into details about how they are to go about it. It's just telling them that they are to do the work and not to rely on the work of others. I don't know. It seems to me that there's a big problem with this particular piece, and that's why three of us have already asked the question about it, because we fear automatically that they're going to try to, bring in the official narrative whatever way they can, and the easiest way to do that is to say, well, NIST has more wherewithal than we have, and they already came to these conclusions, and we just feel that their research is adequate.
Yeah, I feel that anything that goes further than simply mandating them to conduct an investigation is significantly endangers this petition from being deemed valid in court. I don't think that putting if that is how the department is inclined, these like changes in language are not going to really have that much effect on how it gets and how the investigation gets carried out or what they feel compelled to do. We think that when this campaign comes forward and it's going to be very talked about in the media and, you know, widely in New York City if it does get on the ballot, that the intention of the voters, if they vote to pass it, will be fairly clear. And by that point, there will be so much focus put on simply the collapse of the building and how it does not look like a natural building collapse, that it will be very difficult for the department to carry out an illegitimate investigation. So we have spent months looking at past case law and finding proposed charter amendments that were thrown out because it was deemed that the charter amendment was too detailed in how it was basically instructing the whoever it may be to carry out whatever the voters or the sponsors of the initiative intended them to do. And so we worked very hard to keep this as a valid charter, you know, what we felt was sufficiently broad to be a valid charter amendment.
Just one last quick question. Why hasn't this commission or whatever it's called have investigated it in the first place?
Why hasn't what?
This entity that you want to do this work, why haven't they conducted an investigation on their own?
Because they haven't been they have not been inclined to, and they're not legally required to yet.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anybody else have a question for Ted?
Yeah, Robin Horton on the stack. Sorry.
Okay,
yeah,
Robin.
Craig, I have a quick one. Yeah.
Okay, Robin, and then if Ted's willing to take second questions, we'll go from there. Robin, you can ask your question.
Hi, Ted. My name is Robin Horton, air traffic controller, speaking out about the events on 9/11. Been to Ground Zero a couple of times for some anniversaries and have followed fairly closely a lot of the energy surrounding New York CAN, and I'm somewhat critical of it. My question here is your fallback position. And your fallback position in what I've heard you say, and I apologize for not being able to be up front, if I'm misspeaking or repeating, I apologize. Your fallback position is, we'll get people in the streets to march, and then we'll get the people to do this, and then we'll reach out to the people to do that, meaning that failing this, you're going to take it to the grassroots or to the streets, which is what I do all the time. I'm in the streets all the time handing stuff out and doing some stuff. My question to you is, what makes you feel, and okay, let me, before I ask that question, my position is that what we have as a 9/11 Truth for Peace community is that we have information that should be delivered principally to the streets. So I don't see the street as a fall back position. I see the streets educating the public as the fall front position. That's what we should continually be doing. My question to you, and I know David Ray Griffin and have had words with him about the amazingly misidentified initiative on your part in New York City, which is the Building What program. That's probably the most ineffective group of words ever posted in the 9/11 Truth history here. So would you tell me, what is it that makes you feel that failing what you, at the point at which you suspect there might be failure, that you would be successful at getting now the public riled up, when indeed I don't think New York CAN has got the public riled up at all between 2001 and now? And a follow-up question would be, what is the problem with using the letters WTC7, or like Google WTC7, instead of these esoteric things that you're into? Again, I'm being completely front with you. I'm very critical of your group and you personally. Thank you.
I don't even know how to begin to answer this question. The scenario, am I still on?
Yes, sir. You're
okay.
Yeah.
The scenario under which this initiative would be passed is if it gets on the ballot, in which case we hope, we imagine, that people will start to care about it and would help fund an election campaign to educate New York City about the need for an investigation into the collapse of this building. In that scenario, millions of people in New York would learn about Building 7, hopefully, and then it would get passed. And because it's passed, because this law was just passed by millions of voters in New York City, there would be some public pressure that we could hopefully mobilize and use that to ensure, if the department is not already inclined to conduct the investigation in the right way, to try to ensure that it does. That is the scenario that we're imagining. It's fairly straightforward. We don't have full control of it. We acknowledge that. But what else do we have control of? This is simply one approach to try to bring about a new investigation. If there are other approaches that people are pursuing, I support them. I encourage them to do that. As for your other criticisms of our campaign, I disagree with your view on it. Lots of other people do. I think we did a decent job with that campaign and with other things that we've done, and that it was worthwhile. There's no way that on this phone call I'm going to be able to convince you that what we did has been good work.
Fair enough. Craig had another question, Ted, and I don't know if you would be willing to take second questions from people at this point. Can you stay on the
call? Mike Booth still has a question.
Sorry?
I said Mike Booth still has a question.
And Mike, oh, I'm sorry, Mike. Yeah, we didn't get you on the stack. I didn't hear your name. Okay, well, Mike, you can go ahead because you haven't asked a question yet, and then I'll ask him about taking another question. Craig, go ahead.
Okay, Ted, real quick, I just wanted to know if there's any provision in the initiative to ensure public input from architects and other entities that have a wealth of information to bring to the table.
There's not. These are things that we hope and that we assume will happen by way of a, sort of a normal process of public dialogue. And media attention. As I've said before, this has to be the language that you would expect to see in any city charter, and provisions that are very, very specific to this particular issue would not fly in a city charter. So we didn't add anything like that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Ted, can you take another question from Craig?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead, Craig.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Ted, I just wanted to ask you, actually, this will be real quick, because I just wondered if maybe I'm hearing about this campaign and getting the details for the first time, I'd really like to write a piece about it and get it up fairly quickly. So I'm wondering if there are a couple of details that are, once I start working on it, that are not clear to me, which is possible, would you maybe have 10 minutes or so that I could just grab you on the phone just to double-check a couple of points? Would that be possible?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I got your email because you and I did a phone interview before about the Rethink campaign a few months ago. I don't know if you remember that, but So maybe would you want me to just drop you an email or something, and then we could sort of figure out how that might work? Or
yep, absolutely, Craig.
That work? Okay, terrific. Yeah, that, I just want to make sure because it's a thing with a lot of detail to it, and I don't want to do anything that's half-assed, whatever. The thing I did want to ask you, just I might as well while we're all on here, you mentioned the 2 million, the 0.9% increase in the cost of permits to cover. Is this to cover the cost of the investigation? Did I understand that?
Oh, yes, it is.
So it would be increased only for a 2-year period. In order to cover the cost of the one investigation of Building 7.
No, it would actually be a 0.9% surcharge. That it would be. Not going to say this. It would be instituted at the beginning when this is passed, once it becomes effective. If the fund exceeds $3 million, so basically after about three years of no investigations happening after the Building 7 investigation, then the surcharge would go away, and the money would sit there to be used in the future if there ever is another building collapse.
Okay, and then, but the money would be initially used for Building 7, though.
The money would be initially used for Building 7, but because it's unpredictable when buildings will collapse, the surcharge is not totally permanent. It will go away if after 3 years there's no further investigation and the fund exceeds $3 million. Then the surcharge would go away.
Got it. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep.
I have one small comment to make.
Go ahead and I'll make mine. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I'm looking at an email from David Griffin, dated June 8, 2010, in which he was very strongly supportive of the Building What campaign. And he said his proposal, insofar as he was involved in it marginally, I think, was to take it worldwide. So maybe he said something else on a different time. It's quite possible, but at least this shows that he was really... I thought he was behind that myself, and I was working with him all the time.
He coined the phrase.
That's what I thought. But wasn't Dennis McMahon part of that too? Like, the judge said that. A judge
said that
in court.
It doesn't matter. Elizabeth, it doesn't matter. The phrase was indescript, useless. It led to another failed program, and that's my point.
Yeah, I know. You made that point. Fair enough. Okay, so I would just like to comment myself, Ted, that pertinent to Mike Booth's question, maybe it would be useful to have someplace on the website a description of the current methodology of this entity when they do investigations, so people would know, well, if they do conduct an investigation, what, you know, might there be an opportunity for input? Do they normally do that sort of thing, and so forth and so on? So people would have a sense of what that investigation would normally look like, right? See what I'm saying?
Yeah. We, you know, basically in the interest of having this charter amendment be broad and applying to all building collapses, mm-hmm. We do not, until we are beyond the legal challenge and in campaign mode for the election, we don't want to get into those details. Once we get past the legal phase of the campaign, it's going to be all about Building 7 and all about what we think actually happened to Building 7 and how the department should conduct an investigation. So that's really September, October, November is when we go into that mode.
Well, but what I was saying was, if people other than Mike certainly would have the same question about, well, you know, is there going to be public input? Are they going to seek out professional engineers and so forth? I think just being able to demonstrate to them, well, this is how they normally conduct their investigations. They normally do this, or they normally don't do this, and that sort of thing, you know, would provide a helpful answer. That's all I was saying. It would just be informational, by analogy, I guess you could say, or by example. Anyway, I just want to make that comment and pass it to you.
Okay.
So does anybody else have anything urgent for Ted? Because he did ask that to keep his time limited to 15, and he's already been here for about 45. So I don't think we should hold him unless somebody has something very urgent.
Well, Robin, yep.
We'll keep it brief, Robin. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's very simple. Ted, at the end of this program, if it fails, would you please consider resigning? Thank you.
You don't need to answer that if you don't wish to, Ted. It's up to you. But
no, that's fine.
I certainly would like to thank you for your time, for taking the time to really give us a very much clearer picture of this campaign and its parameters. I'm sure we all wish you well, and hope that you or someone else from your organization will continue to keep us apprised from time to time as developments transpire, okay?
All right, I'll do that. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks
everyone for, yep, thanks for your questions.
Good night.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, well, it's 8:05, so that we still have a little bit of time left in the call if people want to discuss anything else. Does anybody else have any announcements since there's a few more new people on the call? Okay, hearing none, then I think we'll just open it up for any discussion that anybody wants to have on any topic per 9/11 truth.
Robin on the stack?
Go ahead, Robin.
I was wondering if everybody in this call was aware that Massimo Mazzucco was planning on editing his 5 hours down to 3 hours, hopefully to get rid of some of the deadwood. Is anybody aware of that or heard of that? I have.
I work with Massimo.
I heard it.
Quite a bit. He's on the consensus panel, and I know that they have actually done that already in Europe. He's back in Italy. And he's been working with some of the Europeans on that. And the reason for it is not to get rid of deadwood, but to make it viewable within a three-hour session, because they've been going around with the film, and that all they've been able to really do is show the first section out of the three DVDs. And then people ask them a whole lot of questions that they haven't covered because they've only covered a third of it. And those questions, they have to say, are in DVD 2 and 3. So that's why they're doing it.
That film has less deadwood than any other 9/11 truth film I've ever seen in my life.
Doesn't mean it doesn't have deadwood.
Well, any film can be edited, but still.
I think it's the best, too. David Griffin.
But I think it's not good enough.
Well. In any case, they have already made a three-hour version that won't keep.
Okay, Elizabeth, do you know if he's still accepting information regarding that editing? I know that he solicited a lot of information all the way through the film itself. Do you have any information that supports, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
I haven't heard of any solicitation at this point. He's just compressing it, really.
I think there was some discussion if he ever decided to put out a second edition, or then maybe that he might take into account some of the comments that people would make. But I don't think he was talking about when he was just making the film shorter that he was going to take comments. I think he just
people don't realize how much that man has gone through. He literally worked 7 days a week for 3 solid years, and when he finished it, he lost his house in Los Angeles because he hadn't been doing other work to maintain mortgages and so on, and he was forced to move back to Italy, and he is in a state of exhaustion, and he's just getting himself back into sort of a normal state of mind now. So I don't think we should ask any more of Massimo. He has put out the most extraordinary work, that one of the most extraordinary work that has been done in the 9/11 truth movement.
I think that we should ask Max Massimo to correct or embellish or prove some of the weaker elements of his 5-hour DVD. He put it out there. He's responsible for it. He needs to correct things that are mistaken.
We'll see when and if he can do that. You know, I'm sure he's hearing about them, Robin.
That's the basis of my question. And I think that we should step up all of our criticisms, because let him filter it out. I know I will.
Okay. Any other topics for discussion? Let's see. No, I guess there's Elizabeth, how are things coming with the consensus panel?
We've got 3 new points that were close to being finished, and David is slowed down quite a bit right now. He's working on a climate book, and it's a huge work.
What book?
on a global warming book, and he's been working on it now for about a year and a half, and he's under the gun a lot, and he's not all that, you know, he's getting a little bit older now. I think he's 70, born in 1939, so, and he's quite open about the fact that he's been dealing with prostate cancer as well, so I can repeat that, but and those drugs, they slow a person down. They also interfere with your memory a little bit. So he's working more slowly. So I've been trying not to push him with the consensus points. And at the same time, he doesn't want to let go of having some control over them. So that's why we haven't had, you know, there's been sort of a period since last September when the last batch came out, that we haven't even started circulating the next batch yet, but I'm hoping to do it within the next couple of weeks. And what's slowing me down right now is that the Richard Gage's 17-city tour of Canada, and there's 17 tour organizers, and I'm responsible for the media work on that. So it's a huge deal pulling off one of these tours. So I haven't had the time to work on the points lately, but because of this really important point about the stiffeners in the NIST report, you know, I think it should be really prominent by the time this petition goes out in July, I guess it is, that people can really readily access the work of our 23 people who've rejected the... You know, who've identified the NIST work as completely, well, I don't know if we use the word fraudulent or negligent or whatever word the group agrees on, but it's pretty clear that if they had those web stiffeners in the drawings, they could never have said that the building fell as it did.
Can you elaborate on that point just a little bit, Elizabeth, because I'm not really familiar with it personally. This is about the stiffeners or what they relate to?
It's the place, Tony has been explaining it to me on the phone. It's where they said that the lateral beam that connected to that all-important pillar number, the column number 79, this beam expanded because it was heated, and it pushed, it managed to push one itself or one of the other beams off the pillar. And that meant the column fell, but they left out a strategic stiffener, which is a flange thing that's a part of the assembly that would make it impossible for that that beam to come apart from the column.
I see.
And if that had been there, heat wouldn't have made any difference. And in fact, he says that. They're coming in like it's like a cross piece. They're coming in from three sides. Even if one of them fell off, there's still enough support that the column would not fall, because it takes a lot to, you know, especially just on one floor. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So this in itself is enough to, you know, if they put the stiffeners into the drawings now and give us another simulation, it would not fall. And there's a couple of guys that have actually done this simulation. They're, and you can, I've looked at it. The thing doesn't fall. It's just all wrong. So if this is in evidence at the time when they're looking at when they're doing their investigation, and they start saying, well, look, the government already did this. Why should we redo it? Then a whole chorus of people can come forward and say, oh, no, they didn't. Their investigation was flawed, deeply flawed. And I think we need to have this particular consensus point there for that purpose.
Right. Thank you very much for that explanation. If nobody has anything else on that, I'd like to announce something that I learned from a board member of AE 911 Truth who's in our local group here. But they are nearing the end of a reorganization of the group, a re formulation of their strategic plan, which should be ready for publication in less than 2 weeks. So that's something to look forward to. See what 89 on the Truth plans to be up to in the future. And it will include some reorganization of roles within the organization. They now have a CEO or a C-something. Oh, I can't remember what she's called, but she's doing more of the hands-on administration now, which brings Richard up to do more of the outreach functions and that sort of thing. So I think that's all to the good. And this is, a lot of this is some based on, I don't know if any of you know who Mr. Graham is, can't remember his first name, but he sent out a letter to people who had signed a petition for 89 Truth, saying that he was a former team leader there, and he had these very trenchant criticisms of the organization, and it was asking people to write in, and I was one of the ones who responded and did write in and got a response. And I think based on Mr. Graham's critique, there's a lot of reformulation of the organization, although he is, of course, ousted. But anyway, that's another story. So,
Robin here.
Robin, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Elizabeth, this is for you, two-part question, or actually it's one-part question to you, and then a statement about this famous flange or stiffener or whatever it might be. Elizabeth, since you work with, you know Maxwell, work with him there, and play such an important role with the consensus panel, which I think is really, is the most, architects and engineers and the consensus panel are the most credible products of the 13, 14 years of research.
Thank you.
How do you reconcile the presentation that Max did, which I agree, a lot of it is absolutely excellent and brilliant, actually. How do you reconcile with him when he presents information in his video that does not gain, that has not gained support from the consensus panel?
Oh, that's easy for us. There are people on the panel that don't agree with all the points we've made, but we require 85% agreement on each of the 37 points. And there are people on the panel that have other, some people like the work of Judy Wood, for example. Well, they can do that, but they're not wearing their panel hat at that moment. They're only wearing their panel hat up to the point where they have looked at these. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah,
sure. There's somebody having a discussion in the background.
Everybody can mute their phones. Please mute your phone. Star 6. Unless you're Elizabeth, star 6. Thank
That's
you.
Better.
Ada, go away. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Thank you. So whenever one of our panel members speaks to the media, we just say, you know, if you depart from something that the panel has approved, just say it. Right now I'm speaking off the record. I'm not speaking in relation to the panel's position, because we have positions on these points. But we also have personal positions, so we just make those clear. And Max is totally, free to make a movie that goes way beyond the work we've done. His work is, he's covered a lot of, he covered 50 major questions, and we've only covered 37.
Right, but I was referring to, since you know both, I'm asking how Max has handled presenting information that is not supported by the consensus.
Well, he's free to do that. He's not acting as a consensus panel member when he makes a movie.
Okay, just asking how we reconcile this, that's all.
Yeah.
Okay, and my second point here, Ken, and that's about it, is this. Here's my analysis and observation regarding the girder stiffener, and you may not like to hear what I'm about to say, but this is the way that things work. From what I see, standing back, taking a look, right now we've got the three
building collapses. All the work on architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth depended upon proving this point, that the stiffener was the reason. Now, you may think that what I just said was illogical, okay, and there's a lot of science behind it that I'm not disputing. I'm not talking about science. I'm talking about in the public world. All of the work, architects and engineers, Jones, everybody else, when it comes out again in the press and they say the 9/11 Truth has made their last and final push and it all comes down to a 12-inch by 1-inch stiffener that some guy did or did not weld, okay, into World Trade Center 7, they're going to say, see, look at these guys. So just brace for that because it's coming. That's all.
Okay, anybody else have any other comments or anything important for discussion? We're nearing the end of our time.
I'll just tell people where they can see this stiffener point. Yeah. It's on the Journal for 9/11 Studies. Just go to their site and look under letters, and it's the top letter there.
Elizabeth, I'm not arguing with the science. I'm not arguing with any of them. I don't deal with science. I deal with what's going on in the street and the media and the processes for undermining the entire movement.
Under letters, you said, Elizabeth? Letters?
Under letters. Yeah, it's the top letter. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Robin. I do. I understand what you're saying about the political manipulation of our work. Yeah.
Too many eggs in this little stiffener basket. Wrong move.
Any other topics for discussion or comments? Okay, then I think we'll have an early end of the call. Thank you all for your participation tonight, and we'll look forward to the last Wednesday of March for our next teleconference. Have a good month, and keep active.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Thanks, Ken.